News from NPR is made possible in part by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois.
Welcome to the Closing Market Report for Wednesday, January 11th, 2006. This is Dave Dickey. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Later this half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. In agricultural news, American Farm Bureau delegates are hammering out policy at their annual meeting. We'll have a report. Also, beef ribs have become a sticking point in negotiations to resume U.S. beef trade with South Korea. And USDA's chief economist says corn acres in 2006 likely won't change all that much from 2005. And later, Drew Lerner will be by with a look at agricultural weather. It's all on the Wednesday edition of your Closing Market Report.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming on AM 580 as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists, on the web at a6395.com and at agrigold.com.
Wednesday afternoon, prices settled like this. March wheat, Kansas City, 375 up 3. March wheat, Chicago, 330 and a half up 1 and a quarter. May, 341 and a quarter up 1 and 3 quarters. March corn, 214 and a half up 1 and a quarter. May, 224 up 1 and a half. July, 232 and a quarter up 1 and 3 quarters. September, 239 and a quarter up 1 and 3 quarters. January soybeans, 574 and a half down 3 and 3 quarters. March, 584 and a half down 4 and a half. July, 603 down 5 and a quarter. November, 610 down 7. January soybean meal, 181.30 up 20. January soybean oil, 21.88 down 20. January feeder cattle on the Merck, 112.05 down 185. February live cattle, 94.22 and a half down 232 and a half. And February lean hogs limit down 60.67 and one half.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, helping to create a storehouse of possibilities and products from a single seed. ADM, resourceful by nature.
Joining us now for a look at the futures market is Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon, Paul.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Let's go ahead and start and get the red ink out of the way first. Why did soybeans have a lower close today?
Well, Dave, I think from a pure fundamental point of view from a pure technical point of view, the technical idea is easier to talk about first. The trend is officially down on the soybean complex. The soybeans, when it closed below 585 and three quarters, you know, the official trend is lower. The farmer did move some beans at $6, but the general supply-demand balance is that somewhere tomorrow morning, we think the USDA will come out with an official number of somewhere between 500 and 600 million bushels of soybeans on their ending stocks. And that's based on the general perception that maybe the USDA will increase production some, but the exports will be dropped, and as a result of that, the carryover and the total stocks are going to increase more acres next year. And the bottom line is the arithmetic is saying it's a bearish situation. In order to correct that and change the trend, prices have to go lower first in order to create demand. So not only from a fundamental, a technical view, the soybean complex is bearish. Private weather forecasters are very high on giving basically every inch of South America a meaningful rainfall. Some rain has occurred and is occurring in Argentina. It will go on into Paraguay and parts of dry areas of Brazil. So it all adds up to a bin-buster crop as of January 11th, 2006 in South America.
So does that December 9 gap at 579 get filled, and do we go lower?
You know, I wouldn't be a bit surprised if the verdict is going to come in and say yes. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean tomorrow, because there's all kinds of tricks that can occur into the marketplace. But our general opinion is that there is a general feeling in the country that they want to be strong holders, because all the other commodities seem to have strength. Jumping over to another exchange, we did see major sell-offs in the livestock market. We still saw some major closes in the strong side of the oil complex. But I think when it's all said and done, is that I'm still a champion. If the trend is up in crude oil, that doesn't necessarily mean a trend up in soybeans. And I think that the overall weight is heavy.
You know, I think we also probably saw some corn bean spreading looking at these numbers. Was that the case?
You know, definitely that was mentioned today, and it's a popular way to trade with spreads, and there's less risk in it. And the general feeling is that that was a predominant feature today in the complex. From a fundamental point of view, you know, the trend in corn is higher. We still see a fairly burdensome supply of corn stocks in the U.S. The crop has been reduced to some extent in Argentina because of dry weather, but the market did see that particular spreading, and that was a major feature in today's trade.
Where do you think corn might go tomorrow after the report?
My general opinion is over the next 10 days to 2 weeks, we're going to see a trading range between 210 and 220, and I don't think there's going to be much change. And I honestly feel, too, is that there could be some weakness into February. We're not seeing the warm weather. We're not seeing the major exports. Corn's also suffering from the sickness of, you know, indirect usage of feed usage with bird flu in the world, and also soybean meal with bird flu. We're also just not seeing the pickup in U.S. exports that we need to have to change the bottom line.
In the wheat pit, March, 330 and a half, and that was up 1.25. It looks like, looking at the volumes and trying to decipher what happened, that there might have been some buying late in the session.
One thing that we are seeing is the longer-range weather forecasts are somewhat better. Some private guys are indicating that there could be some changes on the longer-term maps. It'll be interesting to see what tomorrow maps indicate. In the wheat market, we are going to see, with the rain in Argentina, that crop in South America is going to come through, and I think the yield potential there is still on the positive side. The general impact here is that anytime there's export announcements of wheat to Iraq, that means more hard red winter wheat going out. The hard red winter wheat is the crop in the western U.S., and that's under the watchful eye of the weatherman. So wheat put in a good performance today, as well as corn. We have to say that the wheat trend is still higher by as long as it closes above the 325 level on the March futures contract.
Tomorrow we have the USDA crop production and world agricultural supply and demand estimate reports. Paul, if there is going to be a surprise tomorrow, where do you think it might be?
I would imagine that the surprises will be in acreage in wheat. And also, another thing would be the actual production estimate and the carryover in the soybeans. Those will be watched. I think the USDA is going to be very careful and not bully the market too much, but I do think that we'll find out that those numbers are on the burdensome side.
And the soybean carryover, the average guess, 453 million bushels. That's a bunch.
Yeah, and as I mentioned to you, Ag Resources is, I think, saying 500, and the Informa group are saying 500 to 600 million in time. They're basing some of that on reduced exports and also an increase in production by 50 million. So the carryover is quite large. And if it does get into that 500 million category, Dave, I think it's one of the largest carryovers of free soybeans in the last 10 or 15 years.
And the index funds notwithstanding, Paul, a number of that size would mean that beans' fair value would be somewhere in the $4 plus range?
Well, let's say sub $5 anyway, Dave, and that's a big pill to take for this marketplace. And it has indirect influences on the price level of soybean oil, which is a energy commodity, and it also does have a indirect influence of by getting the price low enough, you might not reduce the or increase soybean acres, you know. So that there's a big price tug of war here on fine-tuning the spring corn and soybean acreage.
I want to go over to the Merck side again and have you reiterate what was going on in that lean hog pit for the second straight day, really hard down.
Yeah, one thing that we understand is that the margins aren't good in the hogs. There is a good oversupply of hogs. And I think it's a case where the trend, of course, is down in the pork complex, and the trend is still higher in cattle. Our general opinion is that it's a fundamental thing of just supply. There's a lot of Canadian supplies. The profit margins and the packer margins seem to be being hurt. A couple of reasons. It seems like that all of a sudden there does seem to be a big supply of chicken in the U.S. market. The beef supplies are getting larger, and, of course, the overwhelming hog supplies all added up to some major losses in here. And I think that the technical side has been long in here, and we are seeing the indirect price erosion in those markets.
Thank you very much, Paul.
Have a nice day. Always nice talking to you, Dave.
You too. Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois. At the bottom of the hour, meteorologist Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City will be joining us for a look at agricultural weather. Mike Solis forecasts for Illinois and Indiana tonight. Clear to partly cloudy, lows from 30 to 37 degrees. Then tomorrow, mostly sunny early, then intervals of clouds and sunshine. Highs ranging from 45 in northwestern Illinois to 63 degrees in southeastern Indiana. In agricultural news, U.S. and South Korean officials have decided to extend their talks on beef trade through Friday. The talks in Seoul are aimed at ironing out technical details so South Korea will end its more than two-year ban on U.S. beef. They were to have wrapped up yesterday. The discussions appear to have hit a snag over beef ribs, which made up over 60% of U.S. beef exports to South Korea in 2003. Delegates to the American Farm Bureau Federation's annual meeting in Nashville yesterday began formulating policy for 2006. Among the most notable decisions, Farm Bureau delegates approved a resolution calling for a one-year extension of the 2002 Farm Bill if a new global trade deal is not reached in the Doha round of World Trade Organization talks this year. And the vote was not close. Delegates approved that resolution by an almost 9-1 margin. American Farm Bureau Federation President Bob Stallman says delegates sent a message not just to U.S. trade negotiators, but to the whole world.
Well, I think we got pretty clear direction. They said we want to maintain the course on the 2002 Farm Bill until we have clear agreement under the WTO that tells us what the future is going to look like for international trade. And I think that's important from a couple of aspects. One, it sends a strong message to those other countries that, you know, we're serious about negotiating, but we're also serious about doing what we've been doing if they're not going to come to the table.
And Stallman says the American Farm Bureau Federation position leaves no doubt that U.S. ag producers will not dismantle domestic farm programs without greater access to foreign markets.
Countries have criticized us for doing what we're doing, and we keep telling them, you come to the table, you work out a deal that's ambitious and that moves forward in the area of market access, and we'll reduce our domestic supports and change our current farm program. But unless and until you do, our delegates are telling us they pretty well like what we have.
And by a 3-1 vote, Farm Bureau delegates defeated a proposal to support a hard cap of $250,000 per year on farm program payments. There's been a lot of speculation that higher energy and input costs will dramatically reduce corn plantings this spring. But USDA chief economist Keith Collins says that probably will not happen.
I don't expect to see a big change in corn acreage in 2006. The tension is between rising demand prospects driven by ethanol and higher input costs driven by the higher energy prices. We also have very strong rotational patterns that are in place for corn.
Indeed, Collins says strong demand will make the difference in driving corn plantings this spring.
We've got better prospects for export demand. We have excellent prospects for ethanol because of the increase in production capacity. With meat consumption rising in the United States and meat production rising, we expect over 3% increase in meat production in the United States. We're going to have good feed demand for corn. The demand picture looks very good for corn. Our stocks are a little high right now, and our carryover estimates are a little high for the end of the 2005-2006 crop year. But I think as you look out into the future, the demand prospects look very good. I think that's going to keep acreage into corn despite the higher energy prices.
On the other hand, Collins says U.S. corn exports will not grow as much this year as USDA thought, mainly because of increased competition from China.
China has had a very good corn crop for the second year in a row. As a result of getting back-to-back big crops in China, they're exporting corn into the world market. That's cutting into our exports. We are only expecting a slight increase in corn exports this year from 1.8 billion bushels to 1.9 billion bushels. We thought it would be more than that, but the good crop in China and their exporting is going to hold us back.
USDA Chief Economist Keith Collins. And that's a look at today's agricultural news.
Agricultural information on AM 580 is made possible with support from Lincoln Land Agri-Energy in Palestine, Illinois, producing a renewable fuel with corn bought directly from the farmer. More information at 800-586-2321 or online at LincolnLandAgriEnergy.com.
Joining us now for our look at the cash grain market is Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. Good afternoon, Kay.
Well, Dave, good afternoon to you, too.
You know, I bet you that producers have taken a torch and locked the doors of their bins.
You're absolutely right. They just pretend like these markets aren't happening. I'm not buying a thing. They've just totally walked away from it. Of course, we had a lot of farmers selling during the rally, and rightly so. But now that we've backed off, the farmers that didn't sell are giving you firm offers to sell if we get back up to those levels. So there's a lot of firm offers out there, but no, it's just totally backed off, and they're waiting to see what the report says tomorrow before they make any decisions.
Spot soybean basis bids continue to increase?
No. Of course, the rail basis is weakening in beans and corn both. We've lost probably a nickel out of the bean basis here in the last week and maybe 4 to 5 cents in corn. And I think that will continue to be the case as the elevators pick up these piles and the farmers move stuff in January. I don't look for a basis improvement for a while yet.
So, therefore, you'll be holding that soy and corn in the bin a little longer, huh?
I think they will. They're just going to hang on to it. Of course, here again, there's been a lot of contracting for further on down the road, so there's not a lot of free stuff out there where they haven't sold anything at all. There is some, but I think they've done pretty well taking advantage of the rally, and hopefully we'll get one again. If these index funds do come in and buy, and who knows whether they will or not, we'll get another rally somewhere down the road.
How about the corn and soybeans that is in the hands of Terre Haute Grain? What kind of basis are you looking for selling?
Well, we're going to hold on to as much as we can. We're only going to ship as much as we need to keep the elevator open, because there's no doubt there's some good carries in the basis and the board. So we're only going to ship what we have to, Dave.
What kind of prices do you have to offer today?
Our cash corn today is $1.96, cash beans are $5.59, and new crop wheat today is $3.25.
Kay, you have a wonderful week.
Thank you very much.
Kay Whitlock of Terre Haute Grain in Terre Haute, Indiana. AM 580 Now podcasts this program, the Closing Market Report, as well as the Opening Market Report and Commodity Week every business day. Receive these agricultural offerings directly to your computer and listen to them as often as you wish. We have instructions on our website to subscribe. Go to will.uiuc.edu/am/agriculture. That's will.uiuc.edu/am/agriculture. And page down to subscribe to AM 580 podcasts. There you will find a few simple steps that will get you up and running in minutes. Thanks for podcasting AM 580 Agriculture.
Today's broadcast is made possible with support from First Midwest Bank, serving the banking needs of Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Doug Slayton in Galesburg at 309-341-5003. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
Illinois farmers had a tough year in their battle against weeds last season. Todd Gleason files this report on the reasons why.
The reason corn farmers in the state of Illinois found more weeds in their fields last season is fairly simple. University of Illinois Extension weed scientist Aaron Hager says corn herbicides did not perform well under the very dry growing conditions.
As we started out the year with fairly dry soils, the effects that the dry soil conditions had on the performance of our soil applied products, especially those that we use in corn. And overall, I guess we could say that it was not very good performance of many of these products, especially when the applications were made to reasonably dry soils to begin with. Many of these products were set on top of that soil for several weeks without receiving any precipitation. And finally, when it did get some moisture to get these things worked into the solution, a lot of this, some of the weeds had already germinated and began to emerge.
So the soil-applied pre-plant herbicides were put on under dry conditions, and then Hager says because the planting season was early, the cleanup farmers tried to do wasn't very successful either. Some of the corn crop was frosted and already under stress when the post-emergence rigs dropped a second round on the field to kill the weeds. In Hager's words, that lit up the corn plant. Not a good thing. To top it all off, this poor kill ratio early on allowed many weeds to set and disperse seeds. And that may mean a heavy weed population going into the 2006 growing season. Oh, and don't forget about glyphosate resistance. Farmers have been planting Roundup-ready soybeans for about a decade, and now the corn plant has been engineered to resist glyphosate too. Nature, not to be outdone by man, has been steadily building glyphosate-resistant weeds, and there were more of them this past season than ever before. Are they in the state of Illinois? Well, Aaron Hager told the crowd at the Crop Protection Technology Conference held on the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign campus this past week that there is a one-word answer to that question.
And then finally, glyphosate resistance, is it coming to Illinois? I guess to answer that question, you can come to the session this afternoon. I'll give you a hint. You got either a yes or no answer, and it probably isn't no.
The really bad part of the answer to that question on the soybean side of the weed control, says Aaron Hager, is that there is nothing new on the horizon to replace glyphosate as a weed control product. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is Dave Dickey. Joining us now for a look at the agricultural weather is Drew Lerner, the Senior Agricultural Meteorologist of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Good afternoon, Drew.
Good afternoon, Dave.
Well, as I look at maps in Argentina, it looks like maybe we're going to see a gully washer there, and heck, it might have even started already.
Yeah, I think it has. We've already seen one round of 1 to 2 inch rains earlier this week in portions of Buenos Aires. The rains didn't extend very much further to the north until last night, and then we saw thunderstorms move right across the heart of summer crop country from eastern portions of Cordoba into the Buenos Aires, Entre Rios border area. And this is all pretty rich crop country, and it looks like we are just at the first half of a four-day period with frequent rain and thunderstorms. In fact, it may even go into a fifth day, I guess. We're going to see enough rain over the next several days that we're going to probably saturate the soil, believe it or not, in areas of Buenos Aires and Cordoba, probably eastern Cordoba and portions of Santa Fe. Those areas will probably have enough rain that we could even see some localized flooding. And it's only the southwest corner of Argentina that's not going to see much precipitation over the next few days, but that is not a very important soybean-producing area. They do, of course, produce some coarse grain and then a little bit of sunseed down that way. But for all practical purposes, we are wiping out the dryness issue in Argentina right now.
And what about Brazil, western Paraná, Paraguay, southern Mato Grosso do Sul? We're going to see any relief from those parched areas?
Well, you know, one of the models out there are not necessarily generating much more than a few isolated shower and thunderstorms from now through the first part of next week. But they do at least have an opportunity for some precipitation to occur from time to time. My suspicion is that there's going to be something a little bit more significant evolve, and it's going to come along as a surprise, I think, just simply because of the increasing amount of moisture that's coming into the atmosphere over Bolivia and northeastern Argentina and some neighboring areas of western Mato Grosso, Brazil. And this moisture is headed southward. It's going to do it rather gradually. There is a high-pressure ridge that's over a big part of Brazil right now, but the airflow around the high-pressure ridge is such that some of this moisture is going to end up coming into those drier areas. And I am beginning to think that we're going to see some surprise thunderstorms this weekend or early next week that end up being a little bit more significant than what's anticipated.
Meanwhile, here in the U.S. Midwest, I guess, for lack of a better term, I call them clippers. We've had a bunch of them come through, and maybe some more on the way?
Yeah, a lot of fast-moving storm systems coming across the U.S., but, you know, most of these storms are coming from west to east across the nation. There's not a lot of north-south movement of air masses, and that's good, and it could be bad. We could be locking up a bunch of cold air in northern Canada, and it'll come back and get us somewhere down the road. But for right now, we will probably continue to see warmer-than-usual temperatures, but a frequent occurrence of precipitation events that will be favoring areas east of the Mississippi River. We aren't doing a very good job moistening the western Corn Belt right now, but the eastern areas are certainly getting plenty wet. Indiana, Ohio, parts of Kentucky, even southeastern Michigan, seeing a lot of precipitation the last couple of weeks, and we're probably going to see that continue for a while longer. There's just not a lot of cold air at the poles, though, right now. The only bitter cold is way over on the other side of the world in northern portions of Russia, in the old Siberia area. Getting pretty cold over there. Temperatures about minus 50, so we're going to watch that real closely.
Might the upper plains see some snow with this latest event?
Yes, there will be some snow this coming weekend. I think late in the weekend, early part of next week is probably our better chance. There'll be a little bit of precipitation before then, a little disturbance Thursday going into Friday, but that system is not going to carry enough moisture to do much. But the one that comes after that might lay down 1 to 4 inches of snowfall across the High Plains region from western Nebraska into portions of the Texas Panhandle. There's not going to be a lot of moisture, though, to that, so we shouldn't anticipate a big turnaround in soil conditions, but we will at least get some moisture to occur, and that's pretty significant for this year because we're just not seeing much of that for right now.
And break down potential for La Nina.
La Nina is definitely evolving, and it is likely to continue evolving as we go through the next few months. La Nina has some very definite biases for our weather in this country, and one of those biases is for below-average precipitation in the central and southern plains during the late winter and early spring. And really that basically means that areas that are dry right now are not going to have much opportunity for picking up on meaningful precipitation over the next few weeks. This area includes Texas, Oklahoma, parts of Kansas, and eventually this bias for below average precipitation will extend all the way up into Minnesota going through Iowa. And a lot of these areas are just not likely to see a lot of precipitation as long as La Nina is in the neighborhood, and it is going to be with us as we go through the spring season. Now, one thing to point out here before we run out of time is La Nina does also generate above-average precipitation biases for the eastern part of the Midwest in late March and April. There's quite often an abundance of precipitation that occurs during that period of time. So we'll be watching for that. And that may be the time period when eastern Iowa and Illinois finally get a chance to get a little bit more of an improvement in their soil moisture deficits that we've seen for weeks, months.
Thanks much, Drew.
Thank you, and have a good day.
Drew Lerner, Senior Agricultural Meteorologist of World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. And that's today's Closing Market Report. Join us tomorrow morning at 8:18. That's a special time, 8:18 Central Time, on the air for our look at USDA's final crop production report. That's a special time, once again, 8:18 a.m. Central Standard Time. This is Dave Dickey.